Well, good morning, TNC family, on this final Sunday in July and on the final week of our annual summer reading series centered around authors and their brand new scholarship surrounding biblical theology and the life of faith. I want to jump in now to today's book, written by a team of authors led by Miroslav Volf, the highly respected, best-selling, award-winning Croatian-born author, currently professor at Yale University. Listen now to some sentences from the introduction. Listen. You have some responsibility for the shape of your life. It's not totally up to you. You don't call all the shots. You didn't get to say where you were born, and an enormously complicated world has shaped many of the situations you find yourself in, and you don't get to determine every outcome. You don't call all the shots, but you are also not a rock, which doesn't respond if someone picks it up, chisels it a bit, and lays it down as part of a garden path. And you're not a hamster either, which does respond, but it doesn't ask how it ought to respond. You are not a rock and you are not a hamster because you do respond. You do play your hand. You can ask that ought question. And because you can, you are responsible for whether or not you do. And this is the most fundamental responsibility that characterizes your life, the responsibility to discern as best you can what kind of life would be truly worth seeking. Miroslav Volf was born in Croatia in 1956. He grew up in one of the only Protestant Christian families in his entire town. His father had become a Christian when, quote, God found him in the hell of a communist labor camp. And his mother, from his earliest memories, was a deeply spiritual woman, highly attuned to spiritual things. And so Volf grew up, he says, different from most of his peers and the larger culture around him, which caused him almost unbearable shame, he says. And so he rebelled against faith for a time, but he was a big-time reader. He loved history and logic and especially philosophy. And, listen to this, during his high school and college years, he began reading Bertrand Russell, Karl Barth, C.S. Lewis, Wolfgang Pannenberg, Soren Kierkegaard, and Friedrich Nietzsche. Not what most high schoolers are reading these days. And he ended up in California getting a master's degree from Fuller Theological Seminary and then a doctorate from the University of Tübingen in Germany under the famous German theologian Jürgen Moltmann. And now he teaches at Yale University in Connecticut, and his brand new book is called Life Worth Living, A Guide to What Matters Most, written alongside two other authors, Matthew Crosman and Ryan Lentz. Together, they teach the most in-demand course in Yale University's humanities program. The class is called Life Worth Living, a class that argues that the question, what is the life worth living, lies at the crux of a crisis that's facing Western culture. The crisis being people just don't think about how they are living their life. They don't ponder it, pray about it, meditate on it. They sort of just go through the motions, a problem made worse by the reality that, Volf writes, you can in fact fail or succeed at being human, that it's possible for you to be living a more worthy or a less worthy life, which is probably why the title of the introduction to his book is, quote, this book might wreck your life. And so you know, all three authors are Christian theologians, but their class in this book draws on all the major world religions and includes prominent non-religious philosophers as well, and it's packed with fascinating stories of folks who have asked and pursued the answer to the question, how are we to live? And let me just say first, it's not an easy read, but second, having read it rather slowly over the summer, I will never think of my life quite the same way again after having read this, because it engages you deeply in this most important question. What does it mean to live a life that is genuinely worth living? In TNC, it's a question about significance and meaning and purpose, good and bad and evil, final aims and ends, and what's truly deeply beautiful and right and good, and what we owe to one another, and what is the most fundamental structure of our world. And the book ends with no answers, only pointers and questions, alongside the argument that it is your responsibility to examine and discern as best you can what kind of life is truly worth seeking. Because, after all, in the words of Socrates, the unexamined life is not worth living. So let me ask you, TNC, let me ask you, you right now who is listening, what do you want out of the rest of your life? And is what you are wanting worth wanting? Because for most people, Wolf says, a conversation about what they want out of the rest of their life ends up being a conversation about tips and tricks to help us live longer, happier, and healthier. Think about it. Most books you read, sites you visit, links we click on, most breaking news from science and medicine is all about new insight in how to live longer, happier, and healthier. But the long, happy, healthy life isn't even close to the most worthy life to seek and to live. In fact, Wolf says, most of the lives we most admire are not lives that are long or happy or healthy. For example, he says, Martin Luther King Jr., we all would agree he lived a meaningful, worthy life, but it was not long. Or look at Abe Lincoln. He talks about him for a while. He lived a good, difference-making life, but if you know your history, it was not a happy life. Or take Lady Constance Lytton, a woman you may not have heard of. She lived a deeply worthy life, changing the course of history for women in her generation and by extension for every generation since. Yet, if you know about her life, it was not healthy in the least. And the list is endless, Wolf says. Study your history. Talk to folks of all ages and generations. The folks who live the most meaningful lives are not the ones who live the longest, happiest, and healthiest, at least not that alone, because they have found something deeper and truer and more worthy, and that's what makes their lives so much better. Now, that doesn't mean we should not try to live long, happy, and healthy lives. Of course we want that. It's just that long, happy, and healthy are not what makes life most worth living. And as I said, the book is based on a semester-long course at an Ivy League university, and so we could talk about this here for probably 15 more episodes, but we're just going to do it for 15 more minutes. And I want us now to just consider three questions from the book to help us think more about the larger question, what kind of life is most worth living? Because the book doesn't give an answer to the ultimate question. It simply wants us to examine a pool, a plethora, a pile of questions that are going to help us get at this one. What do you most want out of the rest of your life? And what is most worth wanting? So here's the first question to help us get at this. Number one, who do you answer to? Who do you set up as the judge of a well-lived life? And who should judge whether your life is a failure or a success? Who are you ultimately responsible to? Now, Wolf says, if you answer, me, it's just me, I'm playing the card game and deciding what counts as a winning hand. I'm singing the song and judging what counts as a beautiful song. I'm in the batter's box and calling the balls and strikes. Me, I'm the judge of my words, actions, and dreams. I'm the standard. There is no higher or wider standard that I'm responsible to than me. Wolf says, on its face, I think we all see how dangerous this idea is. And then he uses this illustration of Smokey the Bear, created in 1944, and ever since the advertising superstar of the U.S. Forest Service. Smokey the Bear, some of you might know, is the longest-running public service announcement campaign in U.S. history. Smokey the Bear, you know, the bear who wears blue jeans and that round-brimmed hat and carries a shovel and appears on road signs, campsites, at national parks, and on, and has said for years, only you can prevent forest fires. Although now he says wildfires, because the grasslands matter too. And Wolf writes about Smokey the Bear, quote, obviously the whole idea that Smokey the Bear is trying to remind us of is that you have a higher standard to answer to. You owe something to other travelers, other campers, and even to the animals and to the forest itself. You can't just go camping in a dry forest, leave your campfire burning, drive home and say, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how I left the campfire since I'm not there anymore. Doesn't matter where I threw out my cigarette butt, because there is a higher standard, a higher source that you are responsible to. And Wolf says that this principle applies to all of our choices, because it's not just preventing forest fires that we are responsible for. There's a higher vision, standard, authority that ought to drive all of our choices and behaviors, and so we'd be wise to get familiar with what that higher source is. And in the book, he explores the wisdom of Confucius, Muhammad, and the Torah around this. He quotes comedians and even Game of Thrones to try to determine what and who do I answer to for the worthiness of my choices. And then he asks, quote, and what if, ultimately, you answer to God for the shape of your life? This is the first question for the life worth living, TNC. Who do you answer to ultimately? Which leads to another question that flows from the first. Question two, does your life reflect your answer to that first question? Does the way you live reflect your answer to that first question? Because Wolf writes, belief that you have a responsibility to a higher, greater source, belief must make its way into real life, into your words, your time, friendships, emotions, hopes, money, all of your real life pursuits, because how you actually live is what matters most. Reminds me of that lecture I heard years ago by the late, great USC professor Dallas Willard, where he used the example of, he said something like, how many of you were worried when driving to this lecture today that you might run into and be eaten by a T-Rex dinosaur? Or when you go to work tomorrow, how many of you will be careful what you say because you believe that aliens or Tinkerbell may be eavesdropping and might disrupt your efforts? That's really what he said. That's how he opened his lecture. And he went on to say, now you might think that's silly, but what you believe affects how you behave, and how you behave reflects what you believe. And TNC, I know this to be true personally, because when I drive into church on Sunday morning, almost always before sunrise, I drive more slowly, not because I'm looking out for T-Rex, but because I periodically see on the edge of the road, sometimes alive and pondering crossing, I see deer. And because I believe that a deer might jump out in front of me, it affects how I drive. And because I don't believe a T-Rex will jump out of me, that also affects how I drive. And I know this might seem silly, Smokey the Bear, T-Rex, and Tinkerbell, but the point I hope is clear. It matters what you believe, because what you believe will end up driving how you live. Question: what does your life, your words, actions, time, money, and emotions reflect about what you believe about our universe? And by the way, what you believe could be wrong. Abe Lincoln was very fond of saying, quote, "If I call a tail a leg, how many legs does a dog have? Five, you say? No, because calling a tail a leg doesn't make it so. And so it matters that we are humbly and continually pursuing the truest and best answers to these questions." Wolf's whole chapter called How Should I Live examines answers to how to live given by everyone from James Madison, Jeremy Bentham, Arjuna, and Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, Abraham and the Torah, and on and on. And then he goes back to Smokey the Bear and he asks, who is responsible for the forests? And who is in your forest? And how big is your forest? And how is the way you're actually living reflecting your answers? First question for the life truly worth living is, who do you believe you answer to? Second question, are you actually living your life in a way that reflects those convictions? And then a third question from the book, from chapter 12, actually a chapter titled When It Ends, in which Wolf writes, you are going to die. What's more, you don't know when. The prospect of death shadows every moment of life, whether we notice it or not, which he says should lead to this question. What is worth dying for? Said another way, as we live today, we are in the process of dying because we are one day closer to that day. And so the way you are living today actually reflects what you are dying for. Let me quote Wolf again. Quote, if you know what's worth dying for, then you'll know what kind of life is truly worth living. Put another way, he writes, if you can't answer the question what's worth dying for, then you might not really have a vision of life worth living. At which point, he has a whole section where he leans into the wisdom and perspectives of the Apostle Paul and the scriptures. Paul, who wrote that death is an enemy, but because God raised Jesus into new life, the power of death has been broken, and we can now look forward in hope to a second stage of life, which means ultimate reality is greater than the temporary enemy of death. Which means, and now I'll just quote from Paul's words in Acts chapter 17, beginning in verse 24. The God who made the world and everything in it, the one who is Lord of heaven and earth, made humans, made you and me, to live on the whole face of the earth, allotting them their properly ordained times and the boundaries for their dwellings. The aim was that they would search for God and perhaps reach out to him and find him. And indeed, he is actually not far from each one of us, for in him, in the divine, we live and move and exist. Paul goes on, and also, as some of your own poets have put it, for we are his offspring. Which means in part, TNC, that what's most beautiful about the most worthy life is it's not linked primarily to can you find the right occupation, hobby, nationality, age, happiness, or health to pursue. It's linked to in this moment of this day, in each moment of each day, are you living with a sense of divine presence? And with a sense that since we are the offspring of God, we have a divine inheritance, a future hope. As John 3:16 tells us, for God so loved us, He gave us the presence and the love and the sacrifice of Jesus Christ so that we might have life and have it to the full and have it forever. And so, and now I will end with just another couple sentences from Miroslav Volf. Quote, "Your life is worth living. It's valuable. It's beyond valuable. It's invaluable. And precisely because it is so truly worth living, your life is worth living well. Your life is too valuable to be guided by anything less than what matters most." And my hope, TNC, is that we would find wisdom and strength and hope as together we continue to pursue what matters most, leaning into each other and ultimately into the God of Jesus Christ, in whom our lives can find their greatest meaning and purpose and peace. Will you pray with me now? And now to the God who is able to do immeasurably more than we could ever ask or imagine. God, we ask that we would truly live and move and find our being in you. Fill us with the truth and the strength and the hope and the peace of what this means. And now, TNC, may the Lord bless you and keep you, make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you, turn his face towards you and give you peace. Amen.